First, explaining your pain to your doctor can be, well, a pain.
Is it burning, stabbing, throbbing, or dull? How bad is it on a scale of 1 to 10? Which emoji-like face best represents how you feel?
And assessing your pain can be difficult for your doctor as well. One person's 4 might be another person's 7. And what about a baby who can't really communicate other than by crying and squirming?
Our next guest is hoping a new device she came up with will take some of the guesswork out of pain measurement and be a more objective way to evaluate pain.
Dr. Julia Finkel is an anesthesiologist and pain specialist at Children's National Health System in Washington, D.C. Dr. Finkel, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Can you give us a sense of how big a problem pain measurement is?
Well, it's generally, pain in general is recognized as the driver of the opioid crisis, so it is that large. And without an objective measure of pain, it's really difficult to treat it. And so it's considered the holy grail of pain medicine. If we can't measure it, we can't fix it. You have to consider that pain is just one word that reflects a particular sensation that has a million different potential causes. And without identifying those causes, we can't be very effective in treating the pain. So our current standard of care has us using these subjective pain scores on a scale of 1 to 10 or the series of faces. Or in the case of nonverbal patients, we have all of these observational scales, but they really amount to being intensity scales. They don't do anything to tell us what kind of pain it is, and because of that, we don't know necessarily what the mechanism is and what drugs or techniques should be used to treat the pain. So it really is an imperative.
Have we always had the 1 through 10 scale or the emoji scale, or have there ever been other ways to gauge how somebody's feeling?
Well, that really is the standard of care at present. Pain is an experience and is acknowledged to be, you know, one's perception. What we're attempting to do here is define the various elements that come to bear on an individual's perception of pain and tease out those different things. And so nociception, which is the sensation carried by the pain nerves themselves, is specifically what we're measuring, and that's what's responsive to drugs such as opioids and other pain medicines.
Are you pretty much taking someone at their word when it comes to pain, or are you looking for other signs or symptoms to verify what they're telling you?
Well, I think we have to consider the patient in the whole context. What's the history of the present illness? What drugs have they taken, and that kind of thing, and to come up with an understanding. It's done very empirically at present. If a patient says they're in pain, we take them at their word. What we need to do, though, is to define what's causing the pain and what various elements are really feeding into that perception. And then we can better address the issue.
You talked about when people tell you that they're in pain. Does the issue of maybe a patient kind of minimizing how much they're in pain, is that a big issue, or don't we know because there's not really a great way to measure that?
Well, someone's tolerance for pain,
yes.
If they can tolerate it, they're not seeking help necessarily. It doesn't mean that's a good thing for them, but we can determine that there's increased sensitivity of the pain nerves. There's something that causes that, and so the cause should be treated if there's something wrong. Pain is, normal pain is meant to be an alerting stimulus to protect an individual. And so, for instance, a diabetic who has decreased sensation in their foot might be, there might be some injury there that goes unnoticed because they're unable to recognize they have pain. So those are serious issues, the lack of recognition. The converse is also true. Extreme pain is a major insult to the body, and so we'd want to treat that as well. And so, again, it's all about, it's not just the sensation, it's what's causing it and how to mitigate whatever the cause is and therefore the symptom.
Dr. Julia Finkel is an anesthesiologist and pain specialist at Children's National Health System in Washington, D.C. Dr. Finkel, I understand you've been working on this objective pain measurement tool for years. So tell us what some of the early attempts looked like.
Well, all of them revolve around discerning what's going on in the brain, in the pain centers of the brain. And so we started out with EEG, electroencephalography, and that gave us some information. And then we moved on to near-infrared spectroscopy, and that gave us different kinds of information. Neither of those techniques could be used in a clinical setting, and so what we want is not a research tool, but a real clinical tool. And we had a serendipitous finding that brought us to the current point where we were able to recognize that the pupil reflects what's going on in the pain centers of the brain. And so the current device now is able to capture those pupillary responses in real time. We do the analyses, and we're able to come up with a reflection of what kind of pain, the intensity of that sensitivity, and also the drug effect. We can know whether or not an opioid is appropriate, and if so, increase or decrease the dose, that kind of thing, or if a different class entirely is indicated.
Oh, the device that you're speaking of is Algometrics, which examines the pupils to measure pain. Can you tell us about the aha moment that led to you discovering this device?
Well, we were developing several different devices at the time. And one of the stimuli that we were using in combination with one of the predecessors resulted in a pupillary dilation. And that's what started this whole thing. And we recognized then that we could look at different dose-response relationships when we look at pain drugs, different intensity response relationships. All of these different parameters we could capture just by looking at the pupil.
Dr. Finkel, why do our pupils tell us so much about our pain?
Well, the pain pathways, if you stimulate a pain nerve, those pathways that it follows project both to the pupil and as well as to the pain centers of the brain. So these things happen in parallel, and we're able to capture it for that reason.
Now, is the device pretty much ready for mass use now, or there's still some things to iron out before it's ready?
Yeah. We are still in the development phases. It is a platform technology, and there are many different applications. Some are more ready for commercialization than others, but we're probably a year away before commercialization.
Now, we found an article in American Veterinarian that went into the difficulties of measuring pain in animals. For one thing, you know, cats and dogs, of course, can't actually tell us what their pain is like. Could your device be used on them as well?
Yes. In fact, that's one of the places where we intend to manifest is in the veterinary space. And it's very easy to capture the same responses in cats and dogs. And cats, as you know, have elliptical-shaped pupil, and part of our software that we've developed is able to recognize that shape as well. And so we are positioned to look at both cats and dogs.
And finally, Dr. Finkel, what's your hope when it comes to being able to objectively measure pain?
Well, if we were able to do that, it would allow us to have a very personalized and mechanistic approach to treating pain. And then it would be the same as, for instance, this would be a biometric device, just like an EKG machine, where we're able to look at your heart, the heart rate, the rhythm, whether or not the heart is getting enough oxygen, really have a formidable understanding of what's going on with the heart, but the same would be true for pain. So we would be able to properly characterize it, therefore, implement the appropriate treatments, and then monitor those treatments over time so that we're not causing untoward side effects.
Now, we're actually not done with you yet, Dr. Finkel, but we're talking about the difficulties of pain measurement and a new device that helps assess pain. Dr. Julia Finkel is the inventor of that tool. She's an anesthesiologist and pain specialist at the Children's National Health System in Washington, D.C.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you experienced this situation where it's hard for you to describe pain to your doctor, where it's hard to answer the question of intensity and style of pain? Do you have kids? What's it like getting an idea of how they're feeling, especially in a doctor's office? If you are a healthcare provider for humans, or as we're hearing, if you're a veterinarian dealing with animals, how big an issue is this in your healthcare practice? How helpful would it be for you to have a tool that gives you a little more information, a little maybe less subjective information about the pain your patients are feeling? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR.
We'll pick up the conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Darrell Conner. We're talking about pain and the quest to find an objective way to measure it with Dr. Julia Finkel. She's an anesthesiologist and pain specialist at Children's National Health System in Washington, D.C.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see this? Have you seen this in a doctor's office yourself? Difficulty in communicating how much someone hurts, how much pain you're in? Do you have trouble with the 1 to 10 scale or the faces that describe how you're feeling? Or are you on the other side of the equation here as someone who works in healthcare yourself? How big a problem is this for you? Assessing the kind of pain, how much pain patients are feeling, and of course then taking the next step and try to figure out the causes behind that pain and the best way to treat it, especially with concerns over the opioid crisis. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
And Dr. Finkel, are there any gender gaps? We'll start there first. Are there any gender gaps when it comes to pain perception or pain treatment?
There are certainly differences amongst the sexes. Women are actually have lower pain thresholds ordinarily, but that's all part of the calculus when looking at a pain score.
What about the issues of race? Is there a gap when it comes to pain management or the treatment of pain?
There are some social differences that have emerged. In terms of social bias and that kind of thing. And it depends on the disease in question as well. So we do see that, certainly. And therefore, having an objective measure of pain might help obviate some of these unintended observations or practices. And it really, just as with blood pressure, you get a, if you have high blood pressure, you're going to have an antihypertensive prescribed, and then it's going to be monitored thereafter. The same would be true for pain, regardless of the gender or socioeconomic status or race or any variable.
You can get in the conversation by giving us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Joel in Ironwood, Michigan. Good afternoon, Joel. Welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it. Pain is a major issue with me. It has been for 5.5 years now since a catastrophic auto accident occurred that I was involved in, not my fault. But the result was after the surgeries and exercises and rehab and everything that was involved, I got what's called bilateral leg pain. On my left leg that was seriously damaged. don't laugh, please. During the night, awakens me with pain. Now, the only thing that will suppress it is Oxycontin. Obviously, it is an opioid issue. And I have that on the headboard that I take during the pain issue. And wait patiently for the oxy, 10 milligrams, to suppress the pain, and then, of course, get back to sleep. And when I go into the doctor's office, and my doctor was not the one involved in the surgery or anything in Duluth, it was involved in a local medical facility that I live in Michigan. In any case, they're treating me with the oxy, and the question I get asked, what is your pain threshold or level? And I say, if you have it from 0 to 10, you better change it. It's more like 20 for me during the evening when I'm sleeping.
Joel, thank you so much for the call. And Dr. Finkel, how would the device known as Algometrics help someone like Joel, who, you know, it's certainly no laughing matter, wakes up in the middle of the night and has a severe pain in his leg?
Well, I'm sorry that he's having so much difficulty, and his story is very common. Without really knowing you know, what's wrong, and I'm not his physician, of course, and I can only speak broadly, understanding exactly what kind of pain he's having. So is this a neuropathic type of pain that's occurring? These nocturnal exacerbations of pain are very common, and it may be that this intervention, his treatment using the OxyContin, is entirely appropriate. But understanding why there's a flare at night may have everything to do, you know, with the level of consciousness at the time, and then in a sleep state, there's not suppressing the perception of pain as it would happen during the day. And so basically, using the technology, we would understand better which nerve fibers are at issue, which ones have been damaged, and perhaps come up with a treatment plan that is more targeted and can be delivered at the specific times of the day. So I can only speak very generally, but it's a very common scenario that he's described.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Chris in Adams. Good afternoon, Chris. Welcome to Central Time. Sure. Hello.
Thank you. I have fibromyalgia, which is a very weird pain thing because there isn't anything that can be prescribed to help the pain. I've been on every kind of narcotic drug, NSAIDs don't do anything, blah, blah, blah. I've resorted to nutritional, you know, changing my diet a lot, which helps, and I've also been taking CBD oil. But the question, I have a couple of things. Doctors don't get this. They just get frustrated because they prescribe thing after thing for you, and I was on oxycodone for 6 weeks, and it didn't do anything. And they're completely frustrated by it. The medical profession is flummoxed by this disease. And I am just sort of curious about whether or not your device would be able to, like, maybe poke some holes in what is going on with this, because I go on websites, chat sites for fibro, and there are mostly women are affected by this, and people are suicidal. They're in so much pain, and their doctors just aren't getting it. So,
thank you for the call, Chris. Dr. Finkel, did you have just some advice or some suggestions for Chris?
Well, fibromyalgia is exactly as you described. It is a complex chronic pain syndrome. The research that we're doing is really to define the signatures, or what we call a phenotype, for this disease. It is very real. We do see differences compared to normal sensation. And part of the limitations of treating the disease are the drugs we have available to us to treat it. But we can certainly, from a diagnostic standpoint, we do see differences in the sensitivity of the various pain nerves. The next step is really formulating these new drugs and new approaches to treating fibromyalgia. There are non-pharmacologic treatments as well.
Let's take another call. Let's go to Vern in Boyd. Good afternoon, Vern. Welcome to Central Time. Hello.
Thanks for letting me on, Virginia. Yeah, I had a cluster headache. I got in the Air Force. In 1980, it went ballistic. And I see the pain level was like 9 out of 10 or 9.5. And I cannot remember 1980, 81, 82, 83. I can't remember the birth of two of my kids. The pain was so incredible. I lost my ability to do my high school algebra even. And the doctor, they put me on the EMG. They found out the right side of my face is 14 times more tense than the left side of my face. Pulls your eye down, but the pain of the cluster headache, as it's called, is so great, most people can't stand it. I finally got medication for it in 2005. I got Losartan K, and that works. But it took all that time since 1961.
Mm-hmm. Vern, thank you so much for the call. So using Vern as an example, he walks into the doctor's office as a patient. How would a doctor use your device with a patient like Vern that's dealing with pain?
Again, it's about the diagnostic workup, and so understanding exactly which nerve types are responsible for transmitting these pain signals. In his case, with the cluster headaches, there are real robust diagnostic criteria that would be fulfilled. And fortunately, there are new drugs being developed that are specific for targeting some of the mediators in the body that actually cause or accelerate these cluster headaches.
Since Algometrics is not in doctor's offices yet, do you have advice for doctors and patients when it comes to talking about pain?
Well, I think it's incredibly important to be able to provide qualitative descriptions of what's going on. That gives us some insights into what kind of pain it is, and that's really the jumping board for using the appropriate treatments from the get-go.
Dr. Finkel, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me.
Julia Finkel is an anesthesiologist and pain specialist at Children's National Health System in Washington, D.C. We talked with her about a device she invented that reads people's eyes to measure their pain.